Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the June 1st edition of Commodity Week. In Chicago this week, futures followed the European Union and the Asian markets lower, and the soybeans and wheat slid the furthest. We'll have more on why today during Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Emerson Nafziger, University of Illinois Extension agronomist. In studio with us today, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. And there now you'll find a way to register for our Follow the Corn bus trip. We'll be leaving Monday, August the 24th, for CGB Enterprises Export Facility in Convent, Louisiana. That's near New Orleans. We'll talk with Dan Zwicker and John Bondurant along the way. You can find all the details at willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from Agrigold Hybrids, featuring the Agrigold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgrigoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, let's begin our discussion with this question. Mike Zuzulo, why was there such a large trading range on Friday at the CME Group in Chicago?
I think the answer I'd like to give you, Todd, but I don't think I'm sure about it yet at all, is that we set maybe a bottom in place based upon that terrible data in the outside markets. We saw the spreads firm, and you know what it looked like to me is we saw the natural gas bottom like this about 3 weeks ago. We saw the hogs bottom like this about a week ago, right after the holiday, in fact, and it looks like the corn did the same thing, and I especially like the way the bull spreads came around.
And Pete Manhart?
Well, you got the weak economic news out of here, out of China, out of the globe. You had fun selling to start with, and then fun buying first of the month. And then you had all that Brazil corn coming into harvest, plus weather forecasts. One says hot and dry, one says wet. And all of it pushed and pulled back and forth.
Jackie Vakes.
Well, and it certainly didn't help us that we had rather dismal export sales today. You know, every time we have a holiday, it seems like that Friday export situation is not good. On top of that, the dollar's still hanging at that 83 level, the highest we've been since September 2010. Volume was low after 12:30, which is when we really started to fly down. And so I think that that just propelled the market and gave it more movement. And, you know, there's no doubt after a big move up like this, when was the last time we saw July corn lately up 20 cents or more? You know that people had stops underneath to get out and take profits. So the trade just seems to be acting so much like this is a weather market. It just reminds me so much of the beginning of July when we were around the 4th of July weekend. And when we came in at the beginning of this week, they acted like last weekend was the 4th of July. So, you know, nothing surprises me when that goes on.
July corn this week, by the way, had a high at $5.83¾. The low was $5.51 on the week. Its settlement price at $5.51½ was down 27 cents. Can you take me through some of the export inspection numbers and what they look like and why they were so bad, you think, this week?
Well, it was export sales today.
Sales, right.
Yeah. Well, you know, the part that's difficult about that, Todd, is you know, we had cancellations from unknown in corn again, which is normally China, and yet China came in and had a significant buy again today, about half of what we had for export sales, but you don't hear any talk about it, just like last week. They also had very aggressive guesses. I was surprised at how high the guesses were, and so I think that it was just a disappointment all the way around.
Mike, when you look at the charts for the corn, the monthly closed the May down 77.5 cents in the lead option. It was a pretty sharp drop there.
Yeah, and the bad thing about the corn also is we went below that July 1st high back in 1996 on the monthly chart where we had a high of 554.5, Todd, and that was one of the big numbers I was watching this past week, because it does open up the door to the downside if we don't fight right away, essentially. I think the best chart that I can give you to suggest that, other than the spreads firming and the way the corn was able to come back on such negative news, and that the cash market was starting to get a little bit more active again based upon contacts up on the floor that I spoke with, is the Dow Jones Commodity Index, the Dow Jones UBS Grain Index specifically. That chart held a major support line drawn off the 2010 lows. That's going to be the number one weekly chart for me next week. And right behind it will be the Hong Kong Equity Index, the Hang Seng market. It went down to near six-month lows. We would not want the weekly close on the Hang Seng to go below 18,000, because I think that would introduce the idea that China and Europe are going to continue to pull on us to the downside.
December corn this week had a high price at $5, or settlement price rather, at $5.10. It was off 11.5 cents for the week, Pete. On the monthly trade, it traded from 549.5 to 499 on its low price, so under $5. Finished down 21.5 cents for the week. Is there strength somewhere in that marketplace?
I think there is, but I think it's dependent on the weather market. We hit that low around May 11th, and then we hit the high within a week, and then we came right back down. I think part of it is that Brazilian crop they're harvesting, and it's a lot cheaper, and people are going there to buy old and new crop corn.
It's a pretty good-sized corn crop for
Brazil,
too.
It's almost a record out of Brazil.
And so, and they're exporting out of Brazil, and it's taking a good portion of what we would normally be using out of the United States as an export market.
It's taking a lot of our export sales.
Well, and you know, it goes right back to what Jerry Banky said when we talked to him from the supply and demand. They knew that they were going to double crop corn up in Mato Grosso, but they didn't know how much. And that's what basically pushed the world corn number up 5 million metric tons on this last report. And so, you know, I think that we have to look at it. I think there's a lot of good things for December corn, to be absolutely honest with you. But I think they're just hanging in the background at this point in time. And, you know, you looked at July corn. I agree with Mike, but one of the numbers that really sticks out to me is 547 in December corn, or in July corn, because that's a 62% retracement from the low that came in on in September 2009, 393 and a quarter, when we hit 88 on the dollar, and to the high from August of 2011, which was 795. So if we go through that 62% retracement, I'm with Mike, it's going to be tough to not see us go probably down into the maybe 530 or maybe even 525 level.
Mike, back to you on the exports that are coming out of Brazil. Does that surprise you very much that there's that much corn available?
No, and I don't think it's that bearish, Todd. I think what would be bearish is if they didn't buy anything. I think when we have supplies going out from somewhere, that's friendly. And I think the Brazilians probably have a limited amount, because I suspect Argentina is going to soak up quite a bit as well.
Okay, so bring me back to that thought process, because at least they're buying, and I take it you mean China, other places are buying, so that the slowdown in their economies, and maybe while it's slowing down, isn't devastating. Is that right?
Yeah, the key now is we've had this big price break, and even if the dollar's been going higher, that price break should overshadow the sharper rally in the dollar. I think that's where the export market should come back in. If we've got that weather market that Pete's talking about getting more press next week, you would think end users would start to say, maybe that early corn crop is not going to be as early or as big as I thought. I better start getting my feed needs covered. And it was interesting because Japan in particular was starting to come in and buy corn instead of feed wheat away from Australian feed wheat that they have a surplus of. So it's really good news that that wheat did rally like it did against the corn. And that's where it seems to me the corn should be the leader to the upside as we go forward the next couple of weeks. Like Jackie said, in the weather market, the corn usually takes over.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that was in the market today early on was that there was rumors that China had come in and tendered for 300,000 metric tons of corn from us. And so, you know, but that's a rumor. That's all it is. And you saw how the market just fell apart after that. But I think one of the things that's interesting, anytime you look at South America, whether it's Brazil or Argentina, but especially Argentina, Argentine farmers are going on strike starting on Monday again because of high taxes. And, you know, that always comes back to us and says, you know, to the people who buy from us, we have been very consistent in our exports and in our deliveries of product, and they aren't necessarily that consistent.
Pete, when you take a look at this new lower price of old crop corn at $5.51.5, does it mean that domestically there will be a switch back, if there was ever a switch, from feed wheat to corn?
I don't know that there ever was that big a switch, but I think it will occur that they will go back to feeding more corn. I think part of it is, too, is how much do we really have out there and how much are they going to have to pay over elevators or end users to get old crop corn? And that has been a big thing in the past couple of weeks where the basis has been way over.
Mike, you tend to like to watch the wheat market, and especially if it's leading. It was down 67¾ cents this week in the July at $6.12.5. On the monthly chart, by the way, it was an outside down month for wheat in the July contract. 7.22 was its high. Its low was at 5.92¼. Down, though, just 10¾ cents from the previous month.
Yeah, I think the best thing going for the wheat right now is the weather over in Germany. There's some people over there, some analysts over there saying you better get rain in Germany and some other parts of Northern Europe in the next really 5 to 10 days. And if you don't, you're going to see a sizable decline in some of their crop over there. Germany does anywhere from 20 to 25 million tons. So it's not huge, but it matters in the scheme of things because they're a feed wheat maker as well. So I think that's where Europe is probably our best bet for this monthly chart to come back around and erase it. But we, no question about it, wheat did not leave us very well off at all on Friday, and it's in very shaky territory technically.
Turn your attention now to the soybean market. July had a high this week at $4.02. It's low, or rather, I don't have the high down. Its low is at 13.17½. The settlement price was at 13.44¼. It was down 37¾ cents on the week, and it too put in an outside down month off $1.65½ in the month of May, Pete.
It was amazing, and at one time it was 40 off the low, above the low today, before backing off late. So it's been a very volatile. Is China going to buy? Aren't they going to buy? How much? And I think also then the weather forecasts of either hot and dry or wet more.
And the November beans, or the new crop at 12.58, were down 31¼. Jackie, do producers, in your opinion, for soybeans really need to think about a marketing prospect here as at these prices or not?
I think they have to think about it. If you're asking me if I think that they should be necessarily hedging right now, I would say no. I think that if we close below 12.51, then I think they definitely have to be concerned. But prior to that, I believe that we've got opportunity yet to move to a higher level. You know, what the trade is trading right now is how far ahead we are on planting, you know, and there's a lot of time yet when you look at beans to have all kinds of weather problems. So on a move like this, I don't believe it's the time to panic.
So Jackie says just 7 cents lower from where we are. We're at 12.58. If we get below 12.51, hey, better think about hedging. If we close below that. Pete?
I'd look at selling some out-of-the-money puts down at 12 or a little below and adding to thinking that we will have something happen during the growing season with these lack of acreage that we have on beans to push the price back higher.
I think that the July Nov bean spread needs to come back next week. If it does, I'd be a real, real casual sit back and wait type mindset. I don't like selling here. especially the cash market. And it looks like to me from the little mini crop tours I've been doing, Todd, is you've got a lot of vulnerable beans out there. Beans are harder to gauge, though, on the world market. And we saw that this past week, China is auctioned beans, much lower prices, but the auction didn't make very good sales. They didn't sell very many. And at the same time, you had companies like Oil World coming out saying Argentina's crop smaller than USDA's estimate, and China's going to buy more from the 11 crop even than what USDA gave us in May. So you got a lot more conflicting information going on when it comes to China and soy in the soy complex. And like I said, that auction didn't go very well. So I'm on pins and needles with the beans still because those outside markets tend to hit that a lot harder. So I'd be in paper positions if I lost technical support in the spreads.
Just a minute and a half left in the front end of this program. Can each of you give me a quick tour of what you're hearing from your clients about the condition of the corn and the bean crops? Mike, you said the bean crop was it was very vulnerable. How about the corn from you?
I'd say 60% of the clients who got the rain are breathing a sigh of relief.
The rain helped us a ton, half inch to three quarters, and it's made it look good, but we need more shortly, especially if we turn warmer next week.
Yeah, and I talked to a number of guys that only got a quarter inch out of it, are very disappointed, and then you go up into the Minnesota area where they got 6 inches over the weekend and getting more rain.
And we'll come back in just a couple of minutes. We'll get Emerson Nafziger's view of the state of Illinois and maybe the Midwest, too, and what the marketplace looks like for him, at least in terms of crop condition. Emerson is an extension entomologist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In studio with us, of course, Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodity, and Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana.
I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. We have had yet another dry week for much of the state, with record warm temperatures over the Memorial Day weekend. Rainfall is less than a quarter of an inch across much of southern and central Illinois, but locally heavier rains fell in some locations, especially in northern Illinois. In fact, 1 to 2 inches or more were common in some places. Many places reported record or near record high temperatures over the Memorial Day weekend, with highs in the 90s all 3 days. The week ended with much cooler temperatures. Based on preliminary data, the statewide average temperature for May was 68.1 degrees. That is 5.7 degrees above normal and the fifth warmest May on record since statewide records began in 1895. The statewide average precipitation was only 2.4 inches, that's 57% of normal, and the 21st driest May on record. The U.S. Drought Monitor now has many areas in Illinois in abnormally dry conditions, while far southern Illinois is in moderate drought. Temperatures are expected to be mild over the weekend, with highs in the 70s on Saturday, low Saturday night in the 50s, and highs in the low 80s on Sunday, and lows in the mid-60s. Next week will be warmer, with highs in the 80s and 90s and very little chance of rain. In fact, the forecast through June 14th is grim, with above normal temperatures and below normal precipitation. I'm Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the June 1st edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Jackie Vakes, Pete Manhart, and Mike Zuzulo on the phone line to take a look at what's been happening in the fields across the state of Illinois, the Midwest as well. Emerson Nafziger, agronomist from U of I Extension. Emerson, thanks for taking the time with us. First, let's start off with what conditions are like on June the 1st in the state of Illinois.
We went from extremely high temperatures, at least for us, to jacket weather here this week, which is kind of a difference. But as you heard, May was warmer than normal and drier than normal. And normally we would be looking at our crop here on June 1st, as advanced as this crop is, and there's all kinds of good things we can say about the corn crop. It's up, stands are good, uniformity is good, it's got fairly good color in most places, there aren't drowned out spots, there's not loss of nitrogen like we've seen the last few years. And in general, the advantages that come with a dry spring are all with us today. The big concern, as people have been saying here, is whether or not it's going to remember to start raining again. I was just looking at the rainfall map for Illinois, and most of the northern half of the state got, more than a half an inch, and some areas more than that in this this last round, in the last 48 hours. But southern Illinois, especially extreme southern Illinois, has just been with almost no rain since April. Now, it's always a good thing when they can get their crops in on time, but certainly not a good thing when the water doesn't fall from the sky. We aren't, at this point, in most fields, the crop isn't suffering badly, and the good appearance that it's putting on is not, it can't fake that. If it looks good, it pretty much is good at this point. That means that it's had enough water, it's extracted enough water from the soil to get itself established, to start taking up nutrients, to take up water, which is the key thing, of course, and to get to the size that it's at now. So that's all a positive thing. Those fields that were planted late or in a few cases had to be replanted and were planted into fairly dry soils, the root system maybe never really got up going very well in those dry soils, those are continuing to struggle. I think that there may not be too many acres of that in the state at this point, but where it's still curling up in the afternoon, that's showing the crop that's not able to take up water fast enough, and it's going to continue to struggle until we can get some water into the surface soil. Because Illinois has such good soils that are deep and productive, our soils hold a lot of water for the crop. Certainly, getting the crop through, even through the month of June, would not be a big trick unless it got really hot and dry, and then the atmospheric demand is so high that the crop roots can't really keep up and provide the water that the crop needs. So we're not too concerned today. The people where the surface soil is wet are less concerned than those where it's still dry. But as the comment's been made here, it really, at some point, we need to get rain, or if we run into stress starting at about the time of pollination, that's when we have our greatest concern.
Do we need more moisture here in the next 10 days to get a good ear size set by the crop?
I think it's a little bit early to talk about ear size. Our most advanced crop now is above waist high, and there, at least there's the starting of the ear size. But final ear size determination is usually not final until after pollination. And I think that we probably, because the crop curls up and it looks so bad, I think we probably attach a little bit too much weight to mild afternoon stresses at this time of the year. We've got good sunshine and good temperature. The crop is doing something the rest of the day when it's not, the leaves aren't curled up. And it's got a good root system now, which is going to help provide water longer than if it had a compromised system like we saw 2 years ago. But I've not seen, I'd put it this way, most of us have seen cases where it was very dry this time of year and then it starts to rain, and in my years here, I certainly have had some of these, and yields seem to come out just fine. They might have been reduced a little bit by early stress, but I don't think you can take 50% off the yield of a crop by the time it's waist high or chest high just from drought conditions.
You know, Dr. Natzinger, I appreciate all of the work that you do. And I listened to you talk about when we were really cold and yet the corn didn't freeze, how the physiology of the corn can potentially change and have an impact on yield. And, you know, we had that circumstance in a lot of places, not outside of Illinois also, where it was early planted. How much more stress do you think the dry conditions that we have, and how much more likely may it be that we end up with, like, rootless corn syndrome or something like that on those particular fields that were stressed so heavily when they were so young?
Well, that's a good question. I'd separate those pretty thoroughly, I guess, from that sort of early cool weather stress from water stress like we're seeing now. I do think that it's possible. We've watched that crop struggle back from the April freeze when it was up and planted in mid-March. Ours has kind of come back here, but I think the second planting date we had, which was at the end of March, is going to yield more than it. But I don't think that the water stress that we've had so far has really been a big issue. And I don't think that, I guess I'll put it this way, I don't think the crop that was planted in mid-March or the second half of March and underwent some of that cold stress there in early to mid-April is going to remember that very well, such that this stress is going to add to that stress. Now, I have to be careful with this because we haven't been able to duplicate that sort of thing very well, but I do think the physiology of the plant is a little bit mysterious. But if we can get it into a warm May and May stays fairly warm, generally our history has been that we end up with pretty good crop potential. And 2004 was sort of our hallmark year for that. The crop was planted in good time that year, and May was considerably warmer than usual. And I do think that that gives a boost to the yield potential. Of course, it has to rain then later on.
How would you rank this year's crop so far for corn to the rest of the years that you've seen, including 2004? And then tell me about soybeans.
Well, I think I feel really pretty good about the crop with that warning. If we had a return to normal temperature and rainfall, and that means sort of the inch a week, I think we would have a tremendous crop. We've not had a crop that's this far along at this point in time with this much uniformity. And I'm generalizing, of course, over 12 million acres, and we know that there are certainly fields that have that high crown, that rootless syndrome, some of these problems. I think rainfall is going to help those some, but I don't think they're going to be completely stress-free or stress tolerant as we'd like them to be, and that means possible problems later in the season. So I'm optimistic at this point, but I'm certainly not going to proclaim a record crop or anything like that at right now, because the weather pattern that has set up has been pretty worrisome, and that really needs to change. Soybeans, I don't. Soybeans on the 1st of June usually don't look very good. Is that a direct enough way to put it? Most of them were planted into dry soil. Most of them emerged okay, and stands are pretty good in most fields that I've seen. But they don't have much leaf area yet. They haven't been able to come along like the corn crop and, you know, be eye-popping at this point. But that's pretty typical. If we've got a decent uniform stand and most of the crop in the ground by the 1st of June, I guess we'd have to say we're in decent shape with soybeans. But even more so than corn, probably, it does need to remember to rain for soybeans when they need it, and that's going to be in late July going into August. Certainly nothing record about the development of the soybean crop at this point. But it's just sort of a victory when it's in the ground and up.
Hey, thanks so much, Emerson. We do appreciate you taking the time with us.
All right.
Emerson Napsiger is an extension agronomist at the University of Illinois. A quick final word from the panelist in the studio, Jackie Vakes.
Well, all I can say is I think that people who live in Illinois just should be really, really happy because there are a lot of places outside of here in the United States that raise corn that do not have soil that really is set up to provide a great corn yield.
And Pete Manhart.
Be ready for continued volatility and have traps ready to capture things.
And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.